Welcome back to Newsfile on Joy 99.7 FM, Joy News. And we started off the whole discussion, at least we are yet to talk, but we've been hearing from President Akufo-Addo in his Ashanti regional tour the issues that have come up. There are those who've been calling for the sacking of Finance Minister Ken Ofori-Atta. Is he actually made it to the top five excellent minister list for President Akufo-Addo? Once again, I'll go through my list. At least I have top four here as well that will be joining me for this discussion. Godfred Bopping is a professor of finance and economics at University of Ghana. Dr. Thierry Champong via Zoom is a political risk analyst and economist. I have Brasford Jampo is a professor of political science, University of Ghana. I have Dr. Bernard Tutubwahing, lecturer in marketing, University of Education, Winneba, and political marketing consultant. Maybe we should test our Zoom sound and be sure. Dr. Thierry Champong, Dr. Tutubwahing, good morning and welcome to Newsfile.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. And in the studio, the two professors and the latest professor as well.
Yeah. Morning, morning.
Good morning. Good welcome. Morning. Welcome to Newsfile. So I know that we are talking about the Ashanti Regional Tour to start with, but I know that the four labor unions, the teacher unions, you're still on strike. How is it going? Have we had the response that you were looking for in terms of why we are on the strike?
No, we've not had any such response. You recall that we sent letters around that our conditions of service have been varied to our disadvantage without recourse to us. And who does that? If you want, for whatever reason, you want to vary the condition of service of labor to their disadvantage, you do so with consultations or in consultations with labor. And this thing was not done, and unilaterally, government decided to write that some allowances that are due as should be withdrawn or something like of the sort. And we wrote letters, petitions here and there. We wrote to National Labor Commission. National Labor Commission summoned the government side to ensure that the writing is done, but the government side ignored the National Labor Commission. And so we decided to lay down our tools. And National Labor Commission called us. And as usual, before we went there, we knew that they would say that, look, you guys should call off your strike. And so we're prepared for them. They said that, and they asked the government side to further engage us. You've been engaging with the government side. Clearly, if you look at their posturing and their responses, they are not willing to accept our demand.
We are not, because they are unreasonable demands?
No. I mean, okay. It's something you don't, if for whatever reason you want to vary an employee's conditions of service to his or her disadvantage, you consult. You don't use that kind of buga buga takashi strategy to do that. Because of what? Because today you are occupying a position of trust, of today you are in power and we are teachers. I mean, I don't understand. Regardless of the position you hold, we taught you. And so you have no right to come and bully anybody. And we are not going to allow that. Mm-hmm. And so National Labor Commission directed that, well, we should engage. I don't understand that ruling. We should engage people who are unengageable, people who are not willing. I mean, in our discussions with them, we made overtures. We made sacrifices. We even said that if for some reason, we know times are hard, we are not a bunch of irresponsible or insensitive people. We are teachers.
That's
we are
how you
parents.
Come across. That's how no, you come across.
No. We are parents. You have no idea the concessions that we made. We even went to the stand of telling them that if you can't pay, stop paying, but let's defer payment to a certain date. Even that one, they didn't want to budge. And then you are telling us to go engage them. Well, the National Executive Committee of the labor unions have met, and they've taken certain decisions. I am sure by the close of day today, those decisions will be made public.
Okay.
And the point is that we are still where we are.
Well, that's an issue that I'm sure much later we'll delve into it. But Professor Bopping, I know you've made calls over the period about the finance minister's stance or his status as the finance minister. For you, you feel that his sacking or resignation will turn things around. You've heard the president in the Ashanti region in that interview. He actually makes the top five list. Excellent minister in the first term. It doesn't look like there'll be a sacking. You will not get what you're asking for.
Well, good morning, and good morning to our cherished listeners and viewers. That's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because we are in crisis. If there's anything more than crisis, perhaps that's what you could use. And therefore, you would expect that leadership would respond appropriately. Sometimes it matters that you sacrifice somebody so close, mm-hmm. right? Because if the president will be mindful of what is happening, even across the investor base, home and abroad, you could see that they are already discounting the leadership of the finance minister. Right. So part of leadership is to pick that right signal where you say that, okay, I've gotten to the stage where I need to trade off loyalty. I need to trade off personal interest for the common good. If this is what will do the trick, why not? Because it's done everywhere. It's done in times like this, right? And that would just be the starting point. What we are asking for is actually beyond just asking the finance minister to go. Mm. Ghana has gotten to the stage where an IMF-supported program is not enough. And all that we are doing now is just to wait for what will happen from the IMF negotiation. Come on, the IMF is not here to govern this country, right? So the necessary governance reforms that we need to initiate, and we must do that regardless of whether an IMF program is in place or not, right? Because reforms are more effective when they are bundled together and reinforce each other. Okay, so, and we'll get there. Mm-hmm. They have no moral rights to ask Ghanaians to take a haircut or investors to take a haircut when they have kept their hair on. It makes no sense. And we can do the permutation and say, that, look, we know Cote d'Ivoire took a decision to reduce the number of ministers from 41 to 32. What is so special about Ghana? Right? We can do that and free our space rather than loading the haircuts on ordinary people who perhaps did not contribute to the mess. That's the point that we are talking about. Look, and data exists to suggest that the size of government in Ghana is negatively affecting growth. Mm. That's very clear. So some level of restructuring, some level of reshuffling and downsizing the government and looking at it also across state-owned enterprises, right? A lean government is the best response when you don't have fiscal space. And look, if you look at our own baseline, debt sustainability, we know where Ghana is. The important question is, what do you have to do in order to crawl back to a sustainable level? It's going to be painful, right? That's the stage where we are.
But for him, reshuffling, calling for reshuffling's sake, is not the way to go for
it's
him.
It's not for recycling's sake. There's an end to that. You just look at look at the reaction from the market, the city, okay, the free fall, right? And if you're looking at it, that look, and it doesn't suggest that merely checking the box that we have a program in place, the CD will just resurrect its work. That comes with confidence. You need to start that. Okay, so confidence is wounded. Faith in the government is impaired. You need to do something. It's not like just doing it for the sake of it. We've been talking about this thing right from the second term of the president. You made a case that size matters, given the enormity of the challenges that you inherited, and therefore more hands will be needful. But clearly, after the first term, you could see that size really didn't make a significant difference. So in your second term, probably the people who supported you made their political investment. 4 years of political returns probably is enough. And said, guys, this is a time to leave a legacy. If you're not thinking about legacy right now, when do you want to do that? Because where we are now, 4 years, if you look at the debt sustainability, if you want to crawl back and say you look at it from the fiscal adjustment pathway, you're looking at recording a primary surplus of about 8% and more within the next 4 years. That's going to be painful. That will be hard for anybody to take. And the signal already has been sent by labor unions across the different occupational groups. That is the challenge with IMF itself. That's the challenge with our development partners. To what extent would Ghanaians embrace this austerity? Right? So there's one level saying that this is what we want to do. There's another level saying that it's going to be accepted. How do you package it in a way that it will not cause social unrest? Right, and disintegrate society because we are looking at implementing an austerity in an environment where inflation has already dwarfed returns on people's investment. Mm. Right, wages have failed to track surge in prices, right? Inflation has practically dwarfed the purchasing power of households, right? Across all the layers, you see inflationary pressures that have become entrenched and practically undermining the credibility built around Bank of Ghana's price stability objective. You look at all these things and you just can't say we are waiting for an IMF program.
Okay, well, that's for the second part where we would delve in deeper into this IMF situation. But the times that we are in and the posturing of the president in terms of that interview, the things that he said in the interview when it comes to the calls that people have made in the times that we are in, mentioning that there's a lot that has been done and those detractors will be put to shame, mm-hmm. amongst others, and the fact that just calling for reshuffle is not just the way to go. But, Prof, the issue about the posturing, the tone, do you think that the president went according to script?
Well, I watched and I listened to him. You know, there are many challenges that would have to be tackled in developing countries. Some of these challenges are institutionalized negative norms that would have to be dismantled. Mm. And they include, for instance, the fight against fighting gallancy, okay, ridding the city of hawkers, mm-hmm. dismantling or destroying buildings that have been built on waterways, etc., etc. I mean, these things are challenges that we tend to impose on ourselves. In trying to fix these challenges, you would receive threats from voters and from people. Mm-hmm. When you are doing the right thing in fixing these challenges and you receive threats, you are expected to be bold, to look into the people's face and to tell them that your threats do not unfaze me. And that's the reason why I was happy that in his first term, when he was fighting gallancy, the president said, I'm prepared to put my presidency on the line. If you ask the Greater Accra Regional Minister, he's faced several threats in his bid to get the people of Madina and Adenta to use the footbridge and all that. I mean, there were threats, but he could look into their face boldly and tell them that, look, your threats do not unsettle me, they don't unfaze me. Mm-hmm. That is, so at a certain point in time, leadership would have to be very bold and call the bluff of people who would want to stampede them with threats of voting against them.
And this is one of the
moments? No, voting against them, okay. Should they do the right thing. But you do not call the bluff of voters when they are disappointed. You cannot say your threats do not unfaze me when clearly things that were promised to be done have not been done in a manner that can tangibly be felt. You do not call the bluff of those who enthroned you when clearly they are living in a certain economic miserization. You don't do that. Mm-hmm. Because if you do that, they get disappointed. In times of crisis, the one who is expected to steer us out of that crisis is always listened to. And as people listen to, they expect you to sound presidential, not debative or combative. They expect you to sound soothing and conciliatory. They expect you to say certain words that will bring all of us together, rally all of us behind you. You see, we cannot tackle our challenges without all of us coming together to appreciate the challenges that confront us and say, well, we offer support. So you don't have to make any comments like that people would interpret as divisive or combative and all that. So I was quite surprised when the president did that. And unfortunately, to my mind, he fell for the trap of arrogance that is oftentimes set by the mere exercise of unbridled power. Mm. Okay, Lord Acton said, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And so if a president has exercised power for a long time without countervailing mechanisms that check the exercise of power, it gets into your head. And so sometimes when you are pushed a little, you may fall for the trap of arrogance that is set by the near unbridled exercise of power. And it satisfies what he did. Yes, truly, he tried to explain, went on to say that whatever would have to be done, he would do. But mm-hmm. if you still look at the tone, that he used in going about it. It satisfied Akan saying that, you see, Abuano, if you didn't chena, nisunko, and Ijanu, so a nisunko. I said, if the trap catches a rat, it cries differently from when it is released and all that. So I was a bit saddened. And you see, it also has, that statement also has the potency to douse or undermine the future electoral fortunes of the party that brought him into office. Because there is an impression, you see, he is the head of the party now, and there's an impression that, look, smacking of some dead goat syndrome. You know how dead goat syndrome worked against John Mahama and his party. Okay, so if such utterances are not tamed, if they are not guarded, and they keep recurring, then, in my view, the party may have to consider rescuing itself from the government or delinking itself from the government, because the exit of a president should not spell political doom for the party that birthed the presidency.
Is that possible?
Well, there is a party that keeps saying they want to break the eight. And if you want to break the eight, and there are utterances coming from the head of the party that shows that, well, we don't care, we are almost on our way out, and so whatever threats you issue do not unfaze me. I mean, it would have a certain effect on the psyche of voters. Already I've heard that the community that within which a president said this, yes, they've issued a statement that they would take a second look at their relationship with the party and all that. And so the party that is interested in breaking the eight must not sit down, because as for the president, he is on his way out. And so they must think about, if this continues, maybe his advisors would speak to him and then make sure that next time, even if he has to speak extempore, he would have certain blueprints that would guide the way and manner he would have to speak. This is not a president Nana Akufo-Addo that I know. I mean, we know the president as somebody coming into our home to talk about, to address us as fellow Ghanaians. Okay? When in the days of fellow Ghanaians, he sounded so presidential, and just his words and declarations carried a certain force of law. Don't do this, don't do that, and people obeyed. Okay, and so in times of crisis, we are in crisis, you expect the president, you see, the minimum that he can do is to come into our homes again and to address us in that sober tone, so that we are all at ease with ourselves, we all appreciate the challenges that we face, and then you speak to us in a manner that makes us feel like, yes, we can, let's work together. This is not a time for you to be going about. In the first place, you see, the president has a right to tour the regions, mm-hmm. to see what's going on. He has a right to do so as the chief executive, you know, of the country. But timing matters. Okay, we are in hardship. We are going through difficulties. And so this is not the time for the display of a certain opulence. If the president
get a
is
sense
going,
that that's what is happening.
If the president is going, he has an entourage.
Is there
entourage.
Not a way of touching base with the
no,
people
no, no.
as well?
No, no, no. This
time
is not a time.
In.
You have an entourage of so many Land Cruisers and V8s, over 20 of them. They are all going to be fueled by the state. This is not a time to do that. This is a time for us to do an introspection and to be brainstorming on how or what can be done to surmount the problems that, you know, confront us. As Buckwin was saying, I had also penciled it down. The IMF can certainly not be a panacea to our woes. And it appears that in our country, we have a certain one-way propagandistic stomach direction approach to solving every problem. When we were we wanted to pass the e-levy, it was presented to us as the panacea to our woes. And then we had it and then realized that that was not a solution. Now, we are creating an impression as if going to the IMF is a panacea. But if you go to the IMF and you do not cut the size of your government, if you go to the IMF and we continue to encourage wastage in the system, if you go to the IMF and we mine our gold and get only 5% royalties, if you go to the IMF and then we export, we explore our oil and we get just about 13%, we are not able to renegotiate to get. Gaddafi was taking 70%, said the oil belongs to us. If you won't give us 70%, let the oil be buried in the soil. So if we can't do all these things, and then we think that we are just going to borrow and that will be the solution, then we have lost it as a nation.
Okay, let me bring in Dr. Theo Echampong here. He's also a political risk analyst on this. Dr. Theo Echampong, should we not get to a point where citizens ought not to be threatening leaders with votes amongst others? Or do you also get the sense that in the president's speech or in that interview, he seems overwhelmed by the current crisis or situation that we're in, such that he won't take threats at this time?
Look, good morning, MFR and everyone. And both the two professors and yourself have actually used a number of key phrases, one of which is that we are in crisis. And there's a crisis of confidence across all facets of our Ghanaian social and economic life. And that crisis is also then manifesting to an extent in the frustrations that people are manifesting on the streets. And when the president goes about touring, people saying, well, if you don't do our road or if you don't do our hospital or things like that, then we may not, you know, vote for you. Because part of the reasons why they voted for a change in government in 2016 and maintained this government in 2020 as well was that there's a certain expectation that the problems that they face and the challenges that they face would be resolved. But where we are now with this major crisis of confidence that we have across our social and particularly in our economic life, which is manifesting in a rapidly depreciating currency, which is manifesting in high inflation, which is manifesting in high taxes, which is manifesting in high interest rate, but also above all, the fact that we're living beyond our means and have borrowed, you know, pretty much excessively over the years with very little to show for, then you begin to see a lot of that frustration by citizens and wanting more from their elected representatives. What I expected the government or the president to have done for me was to have probably been a little bit more sober in terms of the response. Yeah. And not this, it came across as being a little bit nonchalant, you know, that, okay, yeah, we are here and like, we don't care. You can vote us out in that regard. But I think we've seen the president speak to us, particularly I recall during the COVID crisis when he came to our homes and he spoke to us, and I wrote it down like Prof said, and spoke to us, fellow Ghanaians, this is what we're doing. I think we are at the time where the president must address the nation. The president needs to speak to all of us forthrightly about the challenges that we face and about what they're doing to get us out of it. Because amidst all of this crisis, there's also some sort of information vacuum, or you may even call it a policy vacuum, where that is feeding to an extent into even some of the issues of what we're seeing with the exchange rate. And we need somebody to speak to us in a more sort of credible and tangible manner. Unfortunately, I don't think that it's the finance minister that can do it, because he's lost a bit of that sort of credibility within the markets and within the players, within the sort of financial ecosystem. And as far back as several weeks ago, I and several others have actually said that the finance minister must go. And not because we don't like the finance minister, but because some serious policy mistakes have been made. One on e-levy, number two on the fact that he himself said that philosophically, he doesn't support us going to the IMF and all of us and all those negotiations. So if it's something that you don't want to do and you're fundamentally against, then why are you the one leading us and driving that negotiation? If I were him, I would have resigned. No two ways about that, right? So in the midst of all of this policy vacuum and the policy signaling and the fact that many market players don't really put that much weight to the word of the finance minister, I think the president should step in and address the nations and speak to us on the issues that we face, but also what they're trying to do to get us out of this mess, which includes, of course, the IMF program that is being negotiated. And then beyond that, I agree that the IMF is not the panacea. It's not what is going to fix the governance issues that we have. But at least in the short to medium term, it will go a long way in terms of helping us gain policy credibility. That's what I think it should happen. But the urgent thing is for the president to address the nation.
But in his communication, does it tell you that it's a situation that he has under control, for instance? Also, the issue about the implications for the NPP as a party. Do you get the sense that he cares at this point?
I think every president would care. He is the supreme leader of the country. Some of the messaging and some of the posturing, it looks like the events of the last few months have sort of taken over a number of the conversations, i.e. Russia-Ukraine, i.e. the current challenges, i.e. the inflation, i.e. the fact that the Bank of Ghana is struggling with its monetary policy tools to bring down inflation and all of that. So there's a lot of issues that have come to the fore at around the same time. But that's why we actually elect leadership. And leadership is meant to solve and address these issues, both in the good and both in the bad. And I think the president would want to care. But it looks as though the messaging, like I talk about this information vacuum or policy vacuum, there seems to be a disconnect in terms of that care and how that is being expressed to the citizens of the country. Because even if things are tough, even things are bad, the fact that the president can speak to us and speak to us saying that we understand your concerns, we're trying to do something about it, you know, give us a little bit of time to find, that alone will go a long way to help assuage some of the frustrations and some of the fears that we currently are experiencing. But if it comes across like we don't care, if it comes across like, you know, it's a bit nonchalant in that regard, then unfortunately that politically can actually be quite, you know, negative for the chances of the party.
Well, Dr. Tutu Mwai, you've also monitored everything that was said by the president whilst in the Ashanti region, the World Bank of the NPP. Do you think that the president would have made these comments 8 years ago?
All right. Good morning. Good morning to my two professors at the studio, and good morning to you. Yeah, I think that the key words, you know, that need to be used in with regards to my comment has been well articulated in the studio and by you. But for me, I think that 8 years ago, I don't think the president would have made such a comment with evidence on his campaign tour in Ashanti region, in Volta region, in the north, and other parts of the country. The president consistently was begging for votes, you know. And I think that with that, it gave him that credibility, you know, as someone who was humble, you know, and that when he comes into power, he's going to, you know, be there for the people. But recent utterances, including the recent one in Kumasi and the Ashanti region, for me, I think that the president has lost it, and it didn't actually augur well, you know, for his large followers, you know, within the political markets. The idea that, you know, he's not going to reshuffle, and that the fact that there are certain ministers who have done extremely well to his expectation.
Excellent.
For me, from a... Yeah, excellent, yeah. For me, from a political marketing point of view, I don't see that, because, you see, a manufacturer will develop a product, but that product is not going to be used by that same manufacturer. It is going to be used by consumers. And so when it comes to the issue of determining quality, excellence, you know, it is not something that, you know, the manufacturer himself, you know, can determine it for the consumer, because the consumer has his or her expectation, and that becomes the point of measurement. So the president is talking about reshuffle, and then we define reshuffle in his own words, you know, without considering the voter who voted him into power. Then, of course, I think that, you know, the president more or less is practicing what we call in political marketing as product orientation. And that is not good, because it is something that suggests that, you know, the president is so much, you know, concerned about himself and that of his mentality. And I think that that didn't actually go well with us, because, you see, how do you call it, the ministers and their performance and deliveries, their mm-hmm. outputs, you know, the voter is that person who is going to receive the output of the ministers. And it is not the president, it is not the ministers. And so within this space, what we are experiencing with regards to what is happening in the market, you go to market today, prices of goods and services have gone up. And every day there seems to be a price increases. Of course, the president will not feel it. Of course, the ministers will not feel it, looking at where they stand. But the ordinary Ghanaian on the street, you know, is going to feel it so much in his pocket. All right. So I think that being described, you know, in the past as a listening president, and coming back to say some of these things, I mean, I think that one didn't really go well with us.
Okay.
And I also want to make this point. You see, in the president's definition of reshuffle, mm-hmm. he asks a question as to whether it is some other people who want him, you know, to change his ministers. To me, I think that it sounded too political. It sounded to a particular direction, and I think that that is not the issue. And I also believe that, you see, from where he stands, for about, as Professor Bobkin said, you know, we have been calling, or people have been calling for a change in government. After the 2020 election, mm-hmm. and you see, it is not because the president feels that his ministers are performing well, all right, but the call is coming from the people, but not from, you know, he himself. And I think that if he is going to listen and he's going to do that, then no one puts the blame on him when there's a failure, all right, because if customers are saying that we want, this is the nature of product that we want you to develop for us, and then you do it, and something happens, okay, it is the consumer that takes the blame, but not you, the manufacturer. All right. So, what I'm trying to say is that we put you there as presidents. We have elected ministers that we are working with, and people are saying that we don't want these ministers. Change them. All right. So when you change them, and things that don't work, then, of course, we will understand that you have done your part. Our suggestion didn't work. So now we leave you to work the way you want to work. But for you to show that kind of position, telling us that you don't see anything wrong with what your ministers are doing, and okay. therefore you're not going to change them, okay. I think that is not really in a good place.
Okay, so on the minister's note, thank you, Dr. Tutubwahin. The excellent five, that's the trades minister, Alan Chemanting. We have the roads minister, Amakwata. We have Ken Ofuriata, the finance minister, which we've been talking about. We have Akutwe Fie, Agric. And then we have Bafwewa, Admissions Bafwewa, Employment and Labor Relations. To the extent that these are key ministries, he says, in the first term, they have performed excellently. Then how come we are where we are today? Do you agree that these are top five, indeed, in terms of...
Let me take a little bite on that. You see, first of all, I don't know whether it will be controversial, but you see, in my view, this is a certain tacit endorsement for one or two of the front runners of the MPP presidential flag bearership, you know, race, that in my mind evens out the president's rumored support for the vice president. I mean, to the extent that he's named Alan Chemanting, and then I'm asked for Ifeanyi Akoto, I don't want to talk about, but Alan Chemanting, I'm mentioning him as one of the best of his ministers. I think that is a certain endorsement that evens out his rumored support for the vice president. So he mentioned five. And I am a bit surprised that, you see, the man who has kept the only palpable signature project of the president running has not made the list. I am surprised. Dr. Edutum, Ministry of Education. And then it is NAPO who has also kept Ghana switched on up till now without doing so. He's also not made the list. So I am wondering how come he was able to do his judgment. But let's talk about a broader picture of representation. You see, there are several theories of representation. One is called the mandate model of representation. The mandate model of representation suggests that, you see, in the lead up to election, a flag bearer goes about campaigning and marketing a certain program or policy ideas to the people. If the people buy into these programs and based on that they vote for you, then we say you have the mandate to govern. Now, when you have a mandate to govern, it's not the people who tell you who should be in your ministries or who should be appointed as ministers and who should be reshuffled. It's not the people. What is important is that you sold a certain idea to the people, and all that we are looking for is for those ideas to be realized. However you form your government or whatever you do, we shouldn't care. That is under the mandate model of representation. And so, to that extent, I can see where the president is coming from. That look, it's not you who will be telling me who I should put and who I should replace and who I should reshuffle, who I should sack and who I should maintain. It's not you who will tell us. But beyond the mandate model of representation, given that the activities of the appointees, given that these activities directly impact on the lives of the ordinary people and not necessarily on the life of the president, the ordinary people also have the right to demand or to make certain statements or make certain demands on the president for reshuffle and for changes to be made to his government, because we are the direct beneficiaries, you know, of whatever these appointees do. And so that is where you expect the president, who is supposed to be a listening president, to see that it can never be true that all Ghanaians are wrong and he, the president alone, is right. Don't forget that this call for reshuffle and people to be made to step down and all that is not coming from... I find it difficult when people want to say that it's coming only from the opposition. Civil society leaders have made such calls too. And some people within the president's own party, people within the president's own party have made this call. Some are making this call publicly. Some, including people within his party, are making this call privately. We are friends to them. With them. And so we hear what they say. Privately, they talk about all these things that the president will have to reshuffle. And so I keep wondering, why is the president not reshuffling? Is
it because it's a winning team? Why change a winning team?
I don't think they've won yet. You see, is it because there is something there that would have to be covered up in perpetuity? Is it because they lied to us that they had the men, yet they didn't have the men? I keep asking myself these questions. But the president must know, and all Ghanaians must know, that failure to reshuffle, okay, is tantamount to the president's unnecessary dissipation of the limited human resources we have that can be brought on board to help steer us out of the quagmires in which we find ourselves. We have, if we truly, you cannot tell me that Mr. Ken Ofori-Atta is the best finance minister that Ghana would ever produce. Or within Ghana at the moment, there is nobody in the MPP who can run our finances better than him.
Okay, if you, so if there the president brains, asks you to give a name,
there are brains, they said they have the men, so they know. There are brains, there are talents that are going waste. And I'm saying that tomorrow or someday to come, somebody should be able to test this at a court, suing the president for causing financial loss to the state, for not bringing on board the brains and talents that could have been brought on board to help steer us, navigate us, you know, through the crisis we find ourselves. Why are we wasting them? The people within the... And sometimes my heart bleeds. When you meet them behind the scenes, they are complaining. Look, we all can help. The president is not bringing us on board. So you should, quote and unquote, talk some for us. I said, but why can't you also make this public? Because the president is making it look as if it is some people, I mean, in this part of the world, when you criticize, they say you don't like the president. I've had so many people call, why do you hate the president? I don't hate the president. I mean, I've maintained a certain position. I am a political scientist. I'm supposed to play the role of a referee. If it is right, we comment. If it is wrong, we say it. And I'm saying that failure to reshuffle at the moment, okay, is tantamount to a needless dissipation of the limited human resource that we have that can be able to be brought on board to help us navigate our way out of the quagmires of economic miserizations which we find ourselves.
Okay, Prof, people have mentioned, at least we know that you have constantly mentioned Ken Ofori-Atta, for instance. I've added the trade, roads, agric, and then labor. But let's stay on Ken just a little bit. What really will change if he goes?
Well, a lot will change. It's the signal. The signal that you send. You know, when confidence is wounded, the way we have it, you want to send every step you take, you want to send the right signal that cross back.
Did he directly wound that confidence?
Yes.
Okay.
But the context magnifies what we are talking about. An IMF program, the big U-10, and you can see so far there's a certain implicit position that government has also delayed in terms of the role they could have played in fast-tracking the program. The call was made on 1st July. It took government so long in putting 8 houses in order. And if you look at the speed with which the IMF responded to that call, the call was made on 1st July. 5 days or so, the IMF had dispatched a team to the country. It was as though they had bought their ticket already and they were just waiting, right? Subsequent to that, if you look at the number of visits, and you see that they themselves recognize a certain level of urgency about the situation that is not same here from the managers of the economy. Then I also tell you something. The two dominant sides to the economy, the monetary and physical. So if you look at the way Bank of Ghana has responded over the period, of course, the timing and all of that, you see a certain recognition that something has to be done. And within what they could do, you see what they have done in terms of positioning the policy rate to eliminate demand-related inflationary pressures. But all this while, the fiscal side has been silent. And that silence is so loud that the market is discounting it, right? That has more to do with the one who is in charge of the finance ministry. That's a lot. You know, sometimes the way the market reacts about some of these things, that there may be people at the finance ministry who really are on top of it and could do better, but there's a head. And I think where we have reached, it would have been more meaningful if the president would take advantage of the situation and say that, you know what, this is needful. It is possible you could come back in another form, but within this particular contest, I think this is what will best serve us. What you see playing out is some level of expectation gap between what the citizens want the president to do and what the president thinks that we deserve, sort of, right? And that's why he has marked them. He has passed them.
What do you think the president thinks the citizens deserve at this point? From everything you've heard him say so far, what's your thinking?
I think to give them excellent mark pass, I think it's more or less like telling us we don't understand what is going on. We are unappreciative.
Mm-hmm.
You are nothing. We are maybe ungrateful or something. That is not to say that these ministers haven't done well. To be very honest, Ken has done his part. And if Ken leaves today, I think we, to some extent, there are things we can link him to in terms of how far we have come. Nobody is saying he has done poorly and all of that, but I think where we've gotten to, we need something beyond what he brings on the table.
Mm.
And also given the fact that we are going into an IMF program, even the technical rigor to operate at that level, I don't think Ken is up to it. That's more than investment banking.
Mm.
Right, talking about an IMF program, talking about fiscal sustainability, talking about the fiscal adjustment that you need to do and to communicate at that level, I think that we need to, you know, we've been there before. And if you look at what the president is going through, we've had leaders who have also gone through that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they reacted so differently from what the president has done, right? We saw what happened during President Mohammed's time and all of that. But then again, you also see something similar playing out. 2014, when we had to go to the fund, his finance minister wasn't too keen about going to the fund, right?
Yeah.
But the president made a call. That team was led by Professor Kwesi Botchi, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of that. So I was thinking that the president would have adopted a similar approach, right? And said that, okay, given your posture and all of that, and the fact that the market itself is not comfortable with you. And I'll give you a couple of examples.
Mm-hmm.
There are statements and assurances that the finance minister has given to the market that turn out to be exactly the opposite. And that's not good for the market.
Perhaps that sounds exactly.
Something similar was what caused Kwesi Kwarteng in the UK, right? At the beginning of the year, when the government announced their enhanced homegrown policies and everything, they were given the assurance that some $2 billion was going to be arranged in addition to the AfriZim loan.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happened. The minister was so bullish about how e-levy was going to deliver on our revenue envelope. The variance was more than 80%. Come on. Okay, so, and then if you look at, you know, something happened, and I think we can forgive the president, but I'm looking at the finance minister here. If you look at the MPP and how they make projections, they normally under project, and they would like to exceed and make news about it, even Kenke Party or whatever, right? But then you look at the 2022 budget, and you see government projections, macro level targets, and 2-3 months down the line, it's like they were dead on arrival, right? You look at inflation target 8% with a symmetrical rate of 2%. Look at where inflation is now. So you look at how much revenue they said they could raise from e-levy, and so when you see this and you analyze that critically, that was what we said at the beginning of the year. Once the budget was presented, that no, this budget was not sufficient enough to give assurance to investors that there is a clear fiscal sustainability path. And if when you see that way, you need an external anchor. And they should have made a call to the fund long ago. If they had done that, probably inflation wouldn't have been where it is right now. And you see, when you see prices head up to where it is, it's very difficult bringing it down. And that's consistent with economic theory.
Mm.
Prices are upwardly flexible and downwardly sticky, right? So don't expect that once the CD crosses those base drifts, you expect that the CD is going to recover its lost value to about 6 or 7 or not. No, 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 no. That's like asking fish to climb a tree where we find ourselves right now, okay? So if you look at all these things, you are looking at it that, okay, beyond an IMF program, what is it that as a president I need to do right now in order to rally the people behind? And that is what we needed the president to do. If you don't do that, there's no way you'll be able to announce that austerity that is coming to Ghanaians. You would rather want to use a face shield, right? See whether you can get civil society, where you can get some people to do all of that. But we need the president to talk to us. We need government to reach out to Ghanaians. That moral command that the president needs in order to come to our homes as fellow Ghanaians, you must end that. You need to create that. And a good way to do so, countries, sometimes leaders do serious reshuffle as a game, right, to win the confidence of the people, you understand? And if you see right now, the economic fundamentals necessarily do not justify the continuous stay of the finance. So if you ask him to go, we will not lose anything.
You have been at least interacting when it comes to the sector. What does the confidence look like in terms of for the ordinary person, for the people that we engage? We'll get into the IMF discussion proper shortly, but confidence levels, what does it look like?
It's very low. The market is concerned. There are rumors of austerity. There are rumors of debt restructuring, haircuts in whatever form, right? So there's some level of uneasiness, right? And if you see in the market, you can see that some people are already reacting to that uncertainty by seeking early redemption of their investment. And they're already taking a deep haircut if you look at the discount that has been accommodated. To some extent, you can see that even before a formal announcement, it's like we are taking advantage of each other right now. And that's not helpful. Okay. And that tells you there's a leadership deficit.
Okay. In wrapping up, Dr. Theo Champon, so we've been talking about the top five excellent ministers who've been manning these key ministries. Looking at the performance, we've seen Agric, I think issues about planting for food and jobs. We've seen employment and labor relations. He made it to the top as well. Roads, Amwakwata also made it. Alan Chemans in trade. And then also Almighty Ken Ofori-Atta. Does that look like an excellent team for an excellent performance, you'd say?
The way I'll answer it is this. If the team is excellent across the board, Ghanaians would feel it and they would appreciate it and they would then say, well done for what you've done. But currently, with where we are now, we're talking almost 40% inflation. You're talking over 50% depreciation of the exchange rate, you know, year to date. You're talking about, you know, potentially people struggling to get access to their money. So we're talking about the potential debt restructuring and all of those things. These things are affecting people's bread and butter, livelihoods, right? So to that extent, I cannot sit here on the basis of those outcomes and say, you know, all the ministers or those five across the board, you know, have done excellently. I think clearly the messaging from Ghanaians and the messaging from a lot of even investors in the economy is that we do have some sort of confidence deficit or a crisis of confidence. And the signaling that the government or the president needs to send is to, one, speak to the nation, but number two, also change some of the ministers, in my view, starting with the finance minister. You know, Prof was talking about the level of uneasiness within the system and the idea that a lot of investors have even already started to price in some potential, you know, restructuring in their numbers. And you can actually see that if you look at the Bank of Ghana's latest numbers, right, the summary of the economic and statistical data. If you look at the external sector data on the balance of payments, there are two things that goes into that: the current account and then the capital and the financial account. Just purely on the capital and the financial account, as of June, right, this year, it was actually down, the deficit was about 1.4 billion USD, or almost 1.9% of GDP. This is people more or less moving some of their monies or portfolio investments out of the system because of this sort of uneasiness or expectation about some of the, you know, debt restructuring and things like that, that is to come. If you look at foreign direct investment as well, the numbers are down on a year-by-year basis, and our overall balance of payments is moved from a positive of $2.3 billion a year ago in June of 2021. Now we're talking a negative of minus $2.5 billion USD. So nobody needs to tell us. You can see this within the market. You can see this also in terms of how ordinary Ghanaians are feeling it when it comes to the cost of living, inflation, and all of that. And to that extent, I don't think that the ministers, some have, but not all of them, have done their job as expected. And I think to send the right signal, and we saw this week in the UK here where I'm based, the Prime Minister was giving the sack. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, the Finance Minister, was also given the sack purely because of some of those policy mistakes that were made. And, you know, we cannot be oblivious to these considerations.
Okay. Well, that's Dr. Theo Champong on that. So, finally, Dr. Tutu Mwahe, on the banana on this, let's just in wrapping up this particular discussion. We know that there will be more tours. As we speak, the president is in the eastern region, and we don't know where it's next, but we are going to see a lot more of these tours and, of course, the touting as well. Going forward, what would you expect will be the posturing such that it will build that confidence whilst we wait for the fellow Ghanaians that you are all asking for? What should be the posturing going forward, you'd say, also to benefit the fortunes of the NPP?
Again, I think that the two professors and Dr. Thieu and myself, we all agree to the fact that, you know, the president is actually exhibiting some level of attitude which Ghanaians are not really comfortable with. One which suggests that he appears to be a bit confused with whatever is happening around him. And he's not also comfortable with, you know, the response he's getting from his own people. But I think that as a leader, you know, you need to be calm in such situations, especially, you know, when you are dealing with issues relating to COVID-19 and the Ukraine-Russian war and stuff, you know, which appears to be putting a lot of load on your government. So he should stay calm so that, you know, he can communicate some level of confidence, you know, and trustworthiness, you know, into us, so that we may also follow. But if he gets himself confused and begins to throw jabs left, right, center, you know, hitting the people hard, I think that the reaction is going to be very negative in 2024. And again, you know, the party's image with regards to how MPP has been positioned in the minds of people is equally going to be affected. And I think that if the president has said, you know, once, you know, that he's going to make sure that he hands over the leadership mantle to the next MPP government, that is, breaking the eight, then I think that his communication, you know, should be something that he needs to actually look at and be thoughtful about. Not just to say that he will put his personal sentiments or emotions ahead of his communication, but again, he needs to look at what the people are saying and also, you know, put it in a better context than showing signals that he doesn't really care about the people, which actually defeats, you know, the perception that has been created with his attempt to address COVID-19. You know, as we all agree to, fellow Ghanaians, is something that, you know, got into our heads. You know, we were all proud of him, and some articles that I read actually said that the president has done well with regards to bringing hope and confidence, you know, to the people of this country. But okay, if it gets to this level and it appears that you are going back and claiming whatever, you know, successes that you have took, then I think that it doesn't also go well with us.
Okay.
But I think that he has his own promises before him. He has made a promise to the party. He has made a promise to the people of this country. And I think that should be his focus, all right? Else, then, of course, nothing should be expected in 2024.
Okay. Dr. Bernard Tutu Buahim there is a lecturer in marketing, University of Education, Winneba, and political marketing consultant. Well, at this point, I would lead by also reshuffling my team. not based on performance. Yes, I'm leading by example. Not based on performance at all.
All of us.
Yes, but it's based on diversity, balance amongst others. So Dr. Tutu Buahim will leave us. And thank you so much for joining us. And I'll bring in Dr. Priscilla Chumesi Bafo, the senior lecturer, Department of Economics, University of Ghana, as we talk about the free fall of the Cedi, worst performing currency against the dollar. That's the Cedi. That's what we're talking about. Coupled with the Guta, you know, we saw the closing down of shops in protest of the galloping Cedi. And now it's more like you blink and open and it's changed. I'll check with my producers if the first figure I put out, which was 14.75, I don't know if that has changed, but they will let me know if, as we are on TV, anything has changed. But that's the last check. That's what it is, selling at that. Also, we've seen the Finance Ministry statement that they have, by the end of the year, the staff team has agreed, will agree on a deal, we are told. Amongst others also, we've been hearing from the World Bank on Ghana not taking advantage of the debt, you know, service suspension initiative. They were asking that if we had done that, a lot may have changed. But beyond an IMF program, what happens? We've heard Professor Bokming mention that the IMF is not going to govern the country, amongst others. But if we do not get the deal by the end of the year, what happens? Is there a plan in place? What really is the plan? Have we been communicated to, amongst others? That's the next discussion right here on Newsfile. Please, we'll take a quick break. When we return, we'll talk about the Cedi, your Cedi, my Cedi, our Cedi. Please stay. Mm-hmm.